Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, November 14th, 2024. Judge tosses Leach defamation suit for the second time. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Brewster County. Last Thursday, a judge dismissed a lawsuit by Jeff Leach of Base Camp Terlingua against Katie Schwartz of Marfa. The Honorable Stephen Abels, sitting in for a series of swapped judges on the 394th District Court, ruled for the second time in the defendant's favor, citing the Texas Citizens Participation Act, TCPA, which is intended to protect state residents from lawsuits retaliating against their expression of free speech. Leach versus Schwartz has had a complex and turbulent journey through the court system. Schwartz, who also goes by the last name Milam, alleges that on the night of June 27, 2019, her then-boss, Leach, had her pinned down and told her he gets what he wants. The climax to an emotionally heated series of discussions after Leach solicited Milam for a threesome with his partner, Anna Oakley. A week later, Schwartz approached the Brewster County Sheriff's Office to file a report about the incident, but declined to press charges. She told a few other friends and co-workers, and over the next few months, a trickle of women filed their own complaints against Leach, alleging a range of abusive behavior from groping to rape. On September 9th of that year, Leach filed a lawsuit alleging that he had suffered substantial loss of his reputation and severe emotional distress as a result of the allegations, which he maintained were false. The original petition did not name a dollar amount, but was seeking compensation for mental anguish and any money lost from his business as a result. Around the same time, stickers with the slogan, "Katie Lied," which Leach would later claim was a reference to a Steely Dan album of the same name, started popping up around the Big Bend region. Receipts produced in discovery showed the stickers were ordered by Leach's partner, Oakley. The Big Bend Sentinel first reported on the issue on November 13, 2019. Base Camp Terlingua was booted from the platform Airbnb a week and a half later, forcing the company to cancel reservations and shift to an in-house online booking system. Schwartz's counsel filed a motion to dismiss the suit under the TCPA for the first time on October 9, 2019, arguing that telling others about the alleged incident was within her First Amendment right to free speech. According to the State Bar of Texas, the TCPA was signed into law in 2011 to protect citizens from retaliatory lawsuits seeking to intimidate or silence them on matters of public concern. Filing a motion under the Act allows defendants to potentially avoid expensive and lengthy litigation. Once filed, discovery is put on hold until the court rules. Schwartz's motion argues that the spread of the news around small-town Terlingua wasn't an attempt to slander her former employer. In good faith, Schwartz believes she endured inappropriate and illegal harassment and assault while in the employment of Leach, to such a degree that she was required to do the following: discuss this matter with other co-workers, friends, family, and relevant community members, leave her employment at base camp, warn others of her opinion regarding the very real risks associated with plaintiff, and file a police complaint. While a judge ruled in her favor on February 6, 2020, Schwartz's TCPA motion was not filed according to schedule, thanks to a series of scheduling delays and hurdles. Getting a visiting judge to come to far-out Brewster County was difficult after District Judge Roy Ferguson recused himself early on in the case, and a significant court backlog contributed to the delay. Therefore, the court finds, even if some matters are untimely, there is good cause to consider the movement's motion to dismiss, Judge Stephen Abels wrote. Leach appealed the case, and the Eighth Court of Appeals did not agree with the lower court's decision to ignore the typical TCPA timeline. So the case was dropped back de novo into Abels' court in the spring of 2022. Almost simultaneously, 83rd District Attorney Ori White dismissed a building criminal case against Leach, who was indicted on rape charges involving a different alleged victim by a grand jury in February 2020. The new case set 2 years of a grueling discovery and deposition process in motion. In September of this year, Ray Lifesti, counsel for Leach, filed a second amended petition, which cut out much of his client's complaint about emotional distress and instead focused on harm to his business caused by allegedly defamatory statements spread in the media and word of mouth. Jody Cole, counsel for Schwartz, quickly filed a new TCPA motion, arguing that Leach's most recent petition was different enough from the document filed almost 5 years earlier that she could reset the clock. Lifesti fired back, sending the judge a side-by-side comparison of the two documents and imploring him not to be swayed by false statements and additional falsehoods. On November 7th, Abels ruled in favor of Schwartz a second time, agreeing that Leach's second amended petition introduces new essential facts, specifically allegations that the defendant made defamatory statements about actual rape and other undefined inappropriate sexual conduct. TCPA dismissals cover reasonable attorney fees for defendants, which the judge has yet to determine. Schwartz's first TCPA motion to dismiss requested $5,000. Cole was elated by the judge's dismissal. Katie's victory is a win for us all and a stand for freedom of speech, she said. This case was about defending our constitutional rights, and last week we won together. For Schwartz, the fight is not yet over. A countersuit against Leach and Oakley, filed in July 2022, is still pending. Over 5 years after I was sued for telling my truth, I finally feel some sort of vindication, she wrote to the Sentinel. I stood my ground all this time for the same reason I filed a police report to begin with, to protect women. We should all be able to speak freely about our experiences to protect our community, and I will always fight for that. Leach and Lifesti did not respond to requests for comment for this story. Photo by Jennifer Pittenger. Sam Cook, who leads taxidermy work at Hip-O, works on a new mount at the shop in Alpine. Longtime taxidermy business closing its doors. Root of legal battle is requirement for a grease trap at Alpine's Hip-O. By Rob D'Amico, Rob at BigBenSentinel.com. Alpine, Hip-O Taxidermy, a fixture where Big Bend hunters had trophies mounted and meat processed for more than 15 years, is soon closing its doors after the city of Alpine cited the business for refusing to install a grease trap, according to accounts from several city officials and the business owner. Howard Parsons, who runs Hip-O with his wife April, posted to Facebook last week, notifying hunters that need to look elsewhere for services as mule deer season approaches. Due to the actions taken by the City of Alpine restricting our ability to operate our business, we will be closing shop, the owners posted. Many Facebook users commented that it could significantly impact hunters because there are no other nearby options for processing game, Fort Stockton being the closest. Parsons told the Big Bend Sentinel he will likely close for good in early December after they finish final mounting projects already underway. The conflict is more complicated than objections over a grease trap that costs a few hundred dollars, and it is the second recent dust-up with a taxidermy business that has left Alpine residents wondering if their city has grown up to be a professional bureaucracy looking out for its infrastructure, or if it's too aggressive in enforcement of its rules. Robert Rux, the head of Alpine Building Services for the city, resigned on November 6th after a conflict he had with the city's top management over a zoning ordinance. He told the Sentinel he felt that the city actually wasn't doing enough to follow rules of good governance, and that with so much conflict in the ranks of employees, he didn't feel he could make positive change. The city will now be looking for its ninth head of building services in less than a decade. In interviews with Rux and three former city employees who worked on the taxidermy issue, they outlined what they said happened. Early this year, two city inspectors went to HIPO and had an informal conversation with owner Howard Parsons. When they asked Parsons if he had a grease trap and commercial dumpsters, which they said was required by city code, he said he did. Two code compliance inspectors then returned later and said it was clear to them he did not have a grease trap or the proper dumpster service. Some supporters of Parsons posted on Facebook that it was on that return trip that a code inspector and the city's environmental officer illegally went through a gate to inspect the dumpsters. Rux said he doesn't know the details of that claim, but said he was told the inspectors had the authority to be where they were. The city then began sending letters to HIPO and eventually issued a citation for no grease trap and improper dumpsters. The Sentinel has requested those documents, but they were not available by press time. Rux said the dumpster complaint was resolved and the citation dropped. Howard Parsons said that on the advice of his attorney, he would only comment on limited details involved in this story. Alpine Municipal Court records show the Parsonses were on the docket for a hearing on the citations twice, and Alpine City Secretary Gio Calderon said they have indicated they intend to fight the charges with a jury trial in municipal court, likely in January. The Sentinel has requested court records, which were unavailable by press time. Rux said he and another city employee initially went to HIPO as a courtesy to make sure they were compliant with all codes because another taxidermy business in the city had faced issues for no grease trap. However, another city code compliance officer, Catherine Reese, who left the city in June, said a neighbor to the business had complained of the smell coming from the dumpsters. Rux said that after the city sent letters to the Parsonses, there was a tense meeting on the issue. I told him it was pretty clear he's going to have to come up to compliance with the grease trap and the dumpsters. And he said, I'm not doing anything. I don't think I need to. Grease traps are required by city ordinance for any business that cooks or processes foods to keep grease from clumping in the wastewater lines and blocking them. Cassandra Woolsey, who formerly worked for Alpine's water utility and left this summer, said lack of traps or non-functioning or unmaintained traps are a serious problem for the city's wastewater service. I can't tell you how many times the water department has to jet the sewers, and we were constantly jetting out big clumps of grease, Woosley said. Rux said that he told Parsons that if cost was an issue, he found grant programs through the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, and that he knew a plumber in town that likely would do the installation for trade, since the plumber was a hunter. Rux said Parsons replied, "If y'all force me to put in a grease trap, then I'm just going to shut down the processing portion of my business and let everybody know why I had to shut down." Rux, who said he is an avid hunter, said he then explained to Parsons why a trap was needed. "I said, you're processing meat, which has fats and runoff, such as blood and whatnot, and all that has to be caught. It's a city ordinance because it's also a state law, per TCEQ. Since Parsons only had a small sink, it didn't appear that the installation of a trap would cost more than a few $100s, Rux said. Businesses are also required to provide the city with receipts for maintaining the traps every 3 months, he said. Reese said she felt the city staff were doing everything they could to try and help Hippo move forward. He, Parsons, came to our office and he wasn't happy with what he was hearing, she said. It was a simple solution that he just didn't want to do. I did the same process with the American Legion, who also threw a fit and told me, 'We can't believe you're doing this,' Reese added. I told them, 'I'm a veteran. I stand for exactly what you guys are here to support. I have to be fair across the board.'" Is a grease trap really needed? Parsons confirmed to the Sentinel that he didn't have city water and used a well and had a septic system instead of city wastewater, which seemed to counter the concerns city officials had about grease getting in their lines. The business is located on the eastern edge of the city limits on Highway 90. However, Rux said that when septic tanks are pumped, the water and solids are taken to the city treatment plant. So any grease collected from the tanks will end up in the water treatment system, which is in continual need of maintenance and repair. You can go over there and see all the greases and fats floating around inside the wastewater treatment facility, and it clogs up pumps and screens and all kinds of stuff, Rux said. When grease traps are cleaned, they are taken to a grease pit at the city landfill. Companies hauling grease and septic waste pay the city fees to dump at the city facilities, he said. Parsons said he had never had the septic tank pumped. It's unclear if that meant since he bought the business in the summer of 2021 or in the 15 years the business has been running. The Alpine Code is simple and says that if you discharge grease or oil as a business without quantifying how much, you need a trap. TCEQ lists taxidermists under its charge of regulatory authority and lists related regulation areas, including grease traps and waste disposals, but officials did not immediately return a request for comment on what exactly is required. Zoning case closes a separate business. Noe Lujan ran a small taxidermy business, Desert Trophies, out of a shop next to a home in Southeast Alpine on Avenue H. City officials said that unlike Hippo, he didn't process any meat and only did European mounts, just receiving the heads to clean for a mounted skull and antlers. Reese said the city received a complaint near the beginning of this year about a bad smell coming from Lujan's dumpster, and when the city inspectors arrived to check it out, they realized he was running a small taxidermy shop and that a boy was hosing animal matter off of some pavement. Lujan denies this ever occurred and said most of his work involved a bucket of soapy water. The city confiscated the dumpster, Reese said, but no animal parts were found in it. City officials told Lujan he would need a small grease trap, but in the end, the grease trap didn't matter because the city discovered he was operating the business out of a property zoned residential. The news came as a surprise to Lujan, who had seen several businesses operate there throughout the years, and his mother-in-law, who owned the property, and family always thought it was zoned commercial. Lujan was right, sort of. City Secretary Gio Calderon said that in 1994 the property was zoned from residential to commercial, but it was done at City Council by a resolution, not the legal way, as it should have, with an ordinance. They had a legitimate issue, Calderon said. However, an attorney for the city said the residential designation had to be left in place. Lujan and his wife, Crystal, submitted an application to change the zoning to commercial this spring. The application was denied by the Planning and Zoning Commission on April 22nd, and then the City Council on May 7th. Calderon said the problem with their strategy was that since the property was in the heart of a neighborhood, it constitutes spot zoning, a new zoning classification being given to a property that is incompatible with adjacent lots, which is illegal in Texas, with a few exceptions under law. Rux, who arrived at the city just as the case was going to planning and zoning, said he felt bad for Lujan because it wasn't his fault for not knowing the commercial zoning was invalid. I've personally had him taxidermy some of my stuff. He does a great job, Rux said. Woosley, formerly with the water utility, followed that case and initially thought the city might turn a blind eye because the business was so harmless, and she believed Lujan was close to city officials. But she said she eventually realized that wasn't going to happen, and the business would be shut down. It is a huge health and safety issue, Reese, the former code inspector, said. He was throwing the carcasses into the trash receptacles. We did not cite him for any of that. We just gave him the warning notices. And he didn't deny anything with the taxidermy. I just explained to him that you can't do this here. Rux said there still may be a way to address the zoning issue, but city officials said it's unlikely because they don't believe you should be dealing with any kind of animal work that creates waste, no matter how little, in a neighborhood. Calderon said he thinks what triggered city staff to inquire about HIPPO was that code inspectors had just dealt with a grease trap issue with Lujan and decided to do the courtesy call Rux described to Parsons. The Sentinel previously reported on city inspectors taking a more proactive approach to ensuring commercial businesses are following all codes. Photo by Jennifer Pittinger. Sam Cook works on an owdad at HIPPO Taxidermy. Timeline undetermined for Holland Avenue fire cleanup. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Alpine. Nearly 6 months after a fire destroyed a 1911-built structure housing several local businesses on Holland Avenue, a timeline for the cleanup of the site has yet to be determined. While the property remains in the care of current owner Bill Ivey, the city itself has emerged as a potential buyer for the building located in a historic section of downtown Alpine. City Council directed City Manager Megan Antrim to head up negotiations with Ivy on a potential sale on September 17th. Antrim told the Big Bend Sentinel the city is continuing to work with Ivy on next steps, but a sale is not yet finalized. Ivy said he is still considering several options for how to move forward. The fire, for which a cause was never officially determined, completely destroyed the building located at 109 to 115 West Holland Avenue. The day after the fire, the area was blackened by smoke and ash. The roof, walls, and building contents succumbed to the flames, leaving behind nothing but smoldering piles of rubble. In the days following the tragedy, a temporary wall, paid for by Rick Stevens, not in his capacity as a council member, was erected to keep the public out of the scorched site. Discussions soon ensued at the city level regarding what to do with the now vacant site, with the mayor and the city council members recognizing the greater need for a revitalization of downtown Alpine. Ivy said he is currently awaiting two bids from local contractors to see how much it will cost to clean up the site. "I have no idea how much the bids will be, if I can even afford it," Ivy said. "That's the next step, is to discover how much it's going to cost to clean it up." "It's a very slow process," he added. "We're doing the best we can considering the situation." The city required that Ivy have an asbestos inspection completed in order to discover whether it was safe to dispose of the wreckage in the landfill, Antrim said. The Texas Asbestos Health Protection Rules and EPA regulations require that an asbestos survey be done prior to renovation or demolition activities. Ivy said it took 2 to 3 months to get the asbestos inspection completed. The Sentinel obtained a copy of the asbestos report from the city, which is dated August 2nd. The site was surveyed by a Texas Department of State Health Services, TDSHS, licensed an asbestos inspector on July 5th. The inspector collected 31 samples from 9 different areas of the wreckage, noting in the report that additional suspect but unsampled materials could be in walls, voids, under debris, or in other concealed areas due to the condition of the building. Of those samples, low levels of asbestos were found in both the off-white wall plaster on brick cement block in the antiques shop and in the built-up roofing located in debris throughout the building. The report recommends that while the wall plaster is exempt from the requirement for regulated approval, it should be removed by a TDSHS-licensed asbestos abatement contractor prior to demolition. The asbestos-containing roofing may be cleaned up without an abatement scope of work or may be demolished in place with the structure, according to the report. The report also recommends that if the plaster found in the antiques shop remains in place during demolition, someone properly trained is on site to ensure disturbance of the material does not cause airborne fiber counts to exceed OSHA permissible exposure levels. The same goes for the roofing. Antrim said, with these results, the city can okay the disposal of building materials at its landfill. She said compliance with the air quality standards during demolition will be up to the building's owner to enforce. Ivy said potential buyers who have contacted him were interested in the results of the asbestos report, and now that it's complete, he can figure out what to do with the property. It is possible that Ivy could sell the structure as is, with a potential new owner agreeing to perform the demolition and cleanup. He said he has an interested party, which he declined to disclose, willing to take the site as is, who is formulating a bid for his consideration. "Everything's on the table," Ivy said. I'm open to all suggestions, all offers. But he noted he doesn't want to see the site taken over by another dollar store, for example. I will be particular on who I would sell it to, Ivy said. They would have to have good intentions to help the downtown district. According to documents obtained by the Sentinel, the city's code enforcement department did send a letter to Ivy on September 5th, notifying him of a dangerous building violation. The building official in charge at the time, Robert Ruggs, has since resigned. The letter states that compliance is mandatory, and after 15 days, a citation will be issued. It also states that minimum court fees start at $81. The remainder of the building and debris needs to be abated, as well as the temporary wall that is encroaching on the public right-of-way, the letter states. The entire property must be demolished and disposed of properly, including all walls unless proven otherwise. Please put proper permits before abatement. Ivy told the Sentinel he became aware of the letter after finding it in a pile of mail just last week. He said he was confused about the temporary wall issue the letter broached, considering the city wanted to put it up to discourage people from entering the area. Ivy said he is aware of the fact that he will likely need to pull permits for the demolition and cleanup process, including a potential permit to close the alley behind the store and another to utilize a nearby parking lot, but that the letter was discouraging and made it seem like the city is not willing to understand that this is not a process that's going to happen overnight. It's not just, let's go in there and clean it up, Ivy said. There's a lot of hoops to jump through for permitting and all of that just to get started. Antrim did not express concerns about how long the cleanup process is taking, but said the matter has been discussed in City Council executive sessions. She said she is unaware if Ivy has been issued a court date regarding the citation. Ivy said he has complied with city requirements and that the delay in getting the situation remedied is not due to resistance on his end. It's not out of not caring or anything like that, Ivy said. I do care very much about what happens to that piece of property because it is just a horrible scar in our city. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. The aftermath of the Holland Avenue fire on Memorial Day. The building remains in ruins. Its current owner is in negotiations with the city, who is interested in purchasing the property.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, November 14th. 100 grams of meth seized during traffic stop. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Deputies with the Ward County Sheriff's Office recovered approximately 100 grams of suspected methamphetamine during a routine traffic stop last week. According to Ward County Sheriff's Office Lieutenant Mark Sanchez, quote, deputies were patrolling in the 1400 block of North Main and conducted a traffic stop on a vehicle for no seatbelt, driver, and passenger. The deputy made contact with the driver, later identified as Jesus Manuel Ibarra, age 28, and passenger Deanna Gale Reed, age 35, both of Kermit. Quote, the officer had both Ibarra and Reed step out of the vehicle, and while speaking to Ibarra, he handed the deputy a bag containing approximately 6.9 grams of suspected methamphetamine, Sanchez said. The deputy conducted a probable cause search on the vehicle, and Sanchez said an additional approximately 93.1 grams of suspected methamphetamine was located in the passenger floorboard, which was in individual baggies packaged to sell. Both Ibarra and Reed were subsequently arrested and charged with manufacturing, delivery of a controlled substance, penalty group 1B, more than 4 grams, less than 200 grams, a first-degree felony. Bond was set at $50,000 each, and Ibarra posted the bond and was released, while Reed remains in custody at the Ward County Jail. Deposit fees doubled for WCEC Rentals. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. In Tuesday morning's commissioners' meeting, moved from Monday because of Veterans Day closing, the commissioners voted to approve raising the deposit fees on Ward County Event Center room rentals. The rental fees will remain the same as last year's rental prices, but the new deposit fees will be higher. Ward County Judge Greg Holly opened up discussion on the agenda item. Ward County Precinct 3 Commissioner Larry Hanna addressed the court, quote, "I propose we make the deposit double the actual rental fee. Some people will not clean up after their event and just tell us to keep their deposit. Well, some of the messes left out there are absolutely terrible. There have been cases of vomit and trash left scattered everywhere. It leads one to believe the deposits are low enough for them to opt to lose that money rather than clean up their mess. If they stand to lose more money, maybe they will clean up instead," Hanna said. Holly and the other commissioners agreed with Hanna and approved the deposit increase. There will be a minimum charge of a $250 deposit on all rental less than $250, such as single room with a kitchen, $100, or without a kitchen, $75, double room without a kitchen, $125, with a kitchen, $150. All room rentals above $250 will be the rental price doubled, such as the East Banquet Hall with two small kitchens rents for $400 a day, making the deposit $800. The full banquet hall with two small kitchens rents for $850, which will make the deposit $1,700, and rental of the full gymnasium with carpeting rents for $1,000, making the deposit $2,000. All deposits are refundable upon inspection of the property after the event has been held. Checks are held and returned after the premises have passed inspection. Cash deposits may take a few days longer for return, depending upon the opening hours and days of the banks. A complete list of Event Center room rental pricing can be obtained by going to www.wardcountyeventcenter.com and click on the Pricing tab at the top of the page. To finalize a rental, call Event Center Supervisor Pablo Valles at 432-755-0720. In other business, the commissioners approved to hire Burns Architecture for architectural services and renovating the old convention center for use as a new senior citizen center. The Burns Architecture bid was for $294,000, which covers the drawing of the architectural plans, finding materials and contractors, overseeing submitted bids to pass on to the commissioners, and acquiring all permits and code requirements. Quote, "This is a much-needed project that's been on the waiting list for quite a while," Holly said. The renovations of the convention center will afford much more space for senior events. Quote, "Not only will it give more indoor space, it will help make parking much safer. The large parking area is right there. They will not have to walk across the busy 4th Street, which is really good," Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelm said. Quote, "This is a really great, much-needed project. Our senior citizens deserve a nice place," Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna said. The renovated convention center will give the center a completely redone kitchen facility, an auditorium, a parlor, office spaces, exercise room, game room, renovated restrooms, and more. In final actionable items, the commissioners approved an agreement with Texas Gas Service Company for easement rights. Quote, essentially, the easement and access that we're providing them to come from Parkway out to the facility across the land that the jail is being built on. There's no cost to this. I had mentioned before in regard to the gas service, initially the plan going down Parkway was that there would be 2 pounds of pressure. That was the original thought and what the jail was designed to have, but the hope was that we would have 5 pounds of pressure. So we were negotiating with Texas Gas on what it would take to get that additional pressure down Parkway. They were saying that it was going to cost over $100,000. I can't remember the exact amount, $120,000 or something like that. That was just basically for completing the loop from up here on Sealy. The work they're doing right now has them jumping under Sealy, bringing it up and going down Parkway, Holly said. The county had help from Butler Cohen and MEDC's Ashley Adalto in convincing Texas Gas Service that the line laid there would benefit any future development of residential structures as well as future business locations. After hearing these ideas, Texas Gas Service is going to do the line for no charges at all. The commissioners also approved a firefighting contract, which is an agreement with the city of Grand Falls to furnish the sum of $11,000 to provide fire protection services to residents outside the city limits of Grand Falls. The commissioners also accepted the election canvass results. In other regular standing business, the commissioners approved the past meeting's minutes, budget amendments, the officer's report, and paying the county's bills. Present for the Tuesday morning meeting were Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Commissioner Precinct 2 Larry Hanna, Commissioner Precinct 3 Dexter Nichols, Commissioner Precinct 4 Eddie Nelms, and Ward County Judge Greg Holly. The next scheduled commissioners' meeting will be at 9:30 a.m. on Monday, November 25th, at the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209. Discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioner's meeting. Snakes, snakes, and more snakes. City of Monahan's Animal Control Officer Joe Olvera is shown capturing a rattlesnake that was hiding under a mattress in the 800 block of East B Street on Wednesday morning. The City of Monahan's employees have begun cleaning up alleys and uncovering rattlesnakes in the process. The snakes, 3 to 4 footers, have been found in piled-up mattresses, couches, wood, and tree branches and other trash debris in various parts of the city, such as the 1200 block of West Sealy and the 1400 block of West 1A Street. City ordinance states it is illegal to place garbage, trash, rubbish, and any article, thing, or material in any street or alley or upon the vacant property of another within the city or along the streets, alleyways, fences, or other thoroughfares within a distance of 5,000 feet of the city is prohibited, and any act in violation shall constitute a distinct and separate offense and punished as such. The alley cleanup has been an ongoing issue for many months, and the hiring of two new city employees has allowed the city to start the alley cleanup process. The city still is needing to hire a heavy equipment operator for the city landfill. Director of Public Works Richard Covington said, quote, "The public needs to be aware that piling trash in the alleys is in violation of city codes. They also need to understand the danger the piles of trash create as they make a perfect hiding place for the snakes," end quote. Kidnapping victim found, three arrested. The story was written by Rosie Flores. Three individuals are in jail following an investigation into a kidnapping incident that happened recently, and more charges may be filed. On November 5, 2024, Reeves County Sheriff's deputies responded to a distress call on Madera Road in the Lindsay edition in reference to an alleged kidnapping. Chief Deputy Ernest Lascano said that family members of a 17-year-old victim received a message through Facebook Messenger stating their family member had been dropped off at a residence on Madera Road. Upon arrival, deputies located the juvenile victim who had sustained injuries requiring immediate medical attention. ESD was called to the scene, and the victim was taken to Reeves Regional Hospital. According to Lascano, the victim said he was taken at gunpoint while walking near the intersection of Highway 17 and West 4th Street at around 3 a.m. on Sunday, November 3rd, and first taken to an open field and then to a residence in Barstow. He was beaten and tortured at both locations. He was later taken to an open field north of Pecos, then to an RV on County Road 406, where the suspects continued to assault him and hold him against his will. During the late hours of November 4th, the victim managed to escape from the RV and walked to a person the victim knew who took him to the residence on Madera Road in the Lindsay Addition, where he was hidden from the suspects and was subsequently located by family on the morning of November 5th. Quote, "The victim sustained severe injuries. He had severe swelling and bruising to his left eye, bruising on both ears, injuries to his head and face, and scrapes on his arms and hands," said Lascano. During the ongoing investigation, Sheriff's Office CID investigators uncovered graphic video that had been sent for ransom. The video evidence depicted the victim enduring acts of torture and physical assault. The disturbing discovery led to the arrest of multiple individuals connected to the case. Two search warrants were conducted by Sheriff's Office CID investigators, one at the suspected RV on County Road 406 and the other at a residence in Barstow, with the assistance of Ward County Sheriff's Office and Texas DPS. During the investigation, officers seized significant quantities of narcotics and firearms believed to be associated with those involved in these criminal activities. All suspects were subsequently arrested and taken to Reeves County Jail. One suspect arrested in Barstow was taken to the Ward County Jail and subsequently brought to Reeves County Jail. The arrested were Jesus A. Rivera Parra, age 32. Parra was charged with aggravated kidnapping, first-degree felony, with bond set at $100,000, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, second-degree felony, bond set at $50,000, kidnapping, third-degree felony, bond $50,000, abandoning endangering child, state jail felony, bond $20,000, and three counts of deadly conduct, Class A misdemeanor, bond $5,000 each count. Bonds were set by Justice of the Peace Precinct 3, Liberty Wofford. Para also has an ICE detainer for investigation of illegal entry into the U.S. Danny Carrasco Gonzalez, age 31, is also currently in the Reeves County Jail and was charged with aggravated kidnapping, first-degree felony, with a bond of $100,000. Bond was set by Justice of the Peace Precinct 4, Sam Lujan. Ramon Munoz Hernandez, age 39, bonded out on charges of aggravated kidnapping, first-degree felony, with bond set at $100,000. Bond was set by Justice of the Peace Wofford. CID investigators continued with the investigation even after all suspects were arrested and more evidence was located and more charges will be added to the suspects, Lascano said. All suspects and victim involved on the aggravated kidnapping are local residents of Reeves and Ward counties. Quote, not related to the oil field, said Lascano. Quote, Reeves County Sheriff's Office would like to thank all the agencies who assisted in the process of investigation and apprehension of the suspects and would also like to thank the citizens involved in the recovery and assistance given to the victim. The Reeves County Sheriff's Office would also like to reassure the citizens that we will work tirelessly around the clock to prevent crime and arrest those who do happen to commit the crimes, said Reeves County Sheriff Arturo Granado. Council approves applying for MVCPA grant. The story was written by Dixie Briggs. The Monahan City Council met for their scheduled meeting Tuesday, November 12th, to consider acting upon agenda items such as consider and act upon second reading of a zoning request, acknowledging an appointment to the Fireman's Relief and Retirement Fund, and approving a Motor Vehicle Crime Prevention Authority grant. Leading the agenda, and after approving minutes from the October 22nd meeting, council members moved on to consider and act upon approving a grant from the Motor Vehicle Crime Prevention Authority, or MVCPA. The grant would allow the MVCPA to provide financial support to law enforcement task forces and agencies for economic motor vehicle theft, including catalytic converter theft. As well as helping with catalytic converter theft, Monahan's Police Department Chief of Police Christopher Quintana hopes it will help fund more cameras around Monahan's. Quote, we would like to be able to purchase more cameras with this grant and are hoping to get at least 8 or 9 more just to deploy them around the city and help the department out, he said. City Manager Rex Thee said, quote, we are hoping to get around $5,000 to help with the motor vehicle crimes, end quote. Mayor Adam Steen asked Quintana, do we have a lot of catalytic converter theft in town? Quintana said, we don't see it too often within the city, but around the county there have been a lot more. Thee added, we had 2 catalytic converters stolen off of city vehicles we had set aside for auction in our city yard around 2 years ago. They came over the back gate and cut them off. Monahan's Police Department Captain Stormy Laws said the West Texas area alone had over $30,000 worth of catalytic converter theft in 2022. The council approved applying for the grant. In second and final readings, the council approved a rezoning request for Block 32 East Monahan Subdivision to rezone from the lot from an R3 district or multifamily to C1 district local retail. This ordinance was proposed to allow retail and residential homes on the same lot. Quote, this request was made by Monahan's Economic Development after the conceptual master plan showed there would be room for both residential and commercial properties on the lot, Thee said. In other business, the council acknowledged the appointment to the Fireman's Relief and Retirement Fund trustee for an expired term of Melvin Kraft, who passed away October 22nd. Kraft was a trustee on the Fireman's Relief and Retirement Fund board for the city of Monahans, and his term would have ended January 25th, 2025. On November 4th, the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department held their election of trustee. They met and appointed member Albert Siebenor to fill Kraft's unexpired term. Along with Thee and Steen, council members present for the meeting were Ivy Valenzuela, Gerald Stava, Richard Hoggins, and Calvin Carroll. City Attorney Justin Till and Councilmember Jeppy Wilson were both absent. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the next City Council meeting, which will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, November 26th, in the Council Chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Helping people is driving force for Wobig's new business. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. A Monahans High School student has started a service to help prevent drunk driving accidents and driving while intoxicated tickets. For a small fee, Andrew Wobig is on call as a pickup service for anyone who has had more than the legal limit to drink and wants to get safely home without incident. Andrew, his mom Megan Weeks, brother Nick, and sister Kaya moved to Monahans a little over a year ago from Normangee, located in northeast Texas. Andrew and his brother Nick attend Monahans High School, sister Kaya is already out of school, and mom Megan Weeks is community ambassador for Hosted America. According to his mom, quote, Andrew has always been the type of kid who will come to the aid of anyone being bullied or hurt. The consequences of what will happen to himself are not important. Just saving another person from harm is his driving force, she said. Quote, my dad used to tell me the line from a country song, if you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything. It became a way of living my life, Wobig said. But Andrew's decision to start a shared ride pickup service was greatly influenced by his uncle's death. Andrew's uncle, his mom's 37-year-old brother, died in a drunk driving accident just this past April. The pickup service started to take form through a series of accidental random events. Andrew's fiancée, Kimberly Akins, works at Bennigan's, where he was hanging out one afternoon, and where he met a stranger who would have an influence on his future. Quote, I went out on the patio for a few minutes, and a stranger was out there smoking a cigarette. We started talking, and this guy, Coons, asked me if I would like to make some extra money. Naturally, I said yes. Coons said he had just gotten a new company truck and needed to move everything out of his old truck into the new one, and would I be willing to do that for him, Wobig said. Coons was so impressed with Wobig's work ethics that he wanted to hire him. Quote, I don't have anything to do in the evenings, so sometimes I go get a beer or two at one of the local establishments. I told Andrew I would pay him $100 a week to be on call to drive me home if I called him, Coons said. Wobig commented, sounded like a good way to earn some extra money. This new job offer, coupled with his uncle's death, and his desire to help people got Wobeck to thinking that possibly there were other people who would benefit from a pickup service when they have spent an evening out on the town. Wobeck will drive to the person, take them home in his vehicle, or drive them home in their vehicle so it is not left sitting out somewhere overnight. Wobeck's mom will follow him when he is driving someone's vehicle so he has a way home himself. The basic charge for inside the city limits is $15 a trip, with outside the city limits costing an extra $1 per mile until the destination is reached. Wobeck's mom was an Uber driver before they moved to Monahans and still keeps her Uber license up to date. Wobeck, along with being a student, works after school and Saturdays at True Value. The pickup service is an after-hours family effort. Quote, "We will all work with each other to get people picked up and delivered to their chosen location. Anyone who needs us can call 254-400-6406 or 979-220-7340, said Weeks.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.